The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics is up next, and we're going to follow Brandon with John Pollock from Post Wrestling.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone.
But we can't ignore the math, okay? We can't ignore the data.
Go on Google Trends, type in your name, then type in mine. You're a straight line. I'm a pyramid.
I like the very direct question on that.
Television ratings, downward spiral. Buy rates plummeting.
The time is now to turn the math around.
And here we are, everybody. It is John Pollock and Brandon Thurston. Welcome to the show, folks. We have a lot to get into. How are you, Brandon?
I'm good. It's time to turn the math around. And what else do they say in that intro?
I don't know, but all of our audio listeners, they're going to have no clue about any hiccups here. We just go live when StreamYard tells us to. But on today's show, we are going to be going through a number of different topics. AEW gearing up for All In Texas next summer with their on-sale event this past Monday. We're going to chat about what is the latest involving AEW, CM Punk, and Ryan Nemeth. We haven't talked too much about CM Punk this year, so I'm looking forward to diving into
that. He's behaved himself. Yeah.
The main event on today's show, Mark Shapiro, the UBS conference. I cannot wait. Something that, curiously, Brandon, the head-to-head battle no one was talking about this past Monday morning.
I was watching both at the same time. There was a live webcast of TKO Chief Operating Officer and President Mark Shapiro at the UBS Global Media Conference, partially going head-to-head with AEW's on-sale event, pushing tickets for AEW All In 2025. I have a list of favorite buzzwords that Mark Shapiro uttered in this pretty interesting talk he did. Tiffany product is what the products are that he's selling. The experience economy, the industrial logic is it all makes sense. TKO is working out great. They've got a strong table set, year-round property, the antidote for churn. He's building moats. There are dynamic winds of change. They promote mass participation events that are sticky, and they have great brand and reach potential, not to mention free cash flow accretion.
There was so much to this one. I felt this was the most... This was the true amalgamation of Mark Shapiro and George Barrios into one being. I don't think we have ever had a spokesperson that has quite replaced George Barrios until now. And it feels like it's a bygone era now. I mean, many of our listeners now, were they around for the George Barrios chats? I feel like, Brandon, this was your on-ramp into WrestleNomics itself. It was those George Barrios, what seemed like monthly chats that he was doing. I mean, there was not a conference that man would turn down, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's a similar, it's a similar road that Nick Khan was on, as he would be the person who would appear at these they're not press conferences, they're media conferences for businesses, mostly publicly traded companies, that every now and then these various banks and analysis firms will have. They'll invite all of these spokespeople or high-ranking executives to these conferences to talk about their stock and to pitch it to investors and other people.
Before we get to more on Mark Shapiro, and there will be plenty on Mark Shapiro on today's show, it is December the 11th, and those that have been following the Vince McMahon investigation, they had this date circled. This is the day when the pause on the case in the Janelle Grant civil suit against Vince McMahon, against John Laurinaitis, and WWE was set to expire. As of today, Do we have any updates in that regard to the pause? I know, Brandon, you have been exhausting resources to find answers.
Yeah. So Judge Jeffrey A. Mayer on June 11th put this case on pause pending a federal investigation, which we all presume is a criminal federal investigation into allegations of sexual assault and sex trafficking against Vince McMahon. That was reported by the Wall Street Journal in February. But I've emailed all the parties. Well, I've emailed Southern District of New York. I haven't reached out to WWE, but I have reached out to Vince McMahon's representatives, to General Grant's representatives, to John Laurinaitis's representatives. SDNY did get back to me and just declined comment, said they couldn't comment on it. I was asking them if the investigation was still ongoing, and if it's not, when can I make a FOIA request? But they had no comment at this time.
Yeah, as a seasoned veteran like yourself, Brandon, I find there are three types of responses that are the most likely. Number one is just the non-response, just nothing. Yes. They ghost you. They don't even acknowledge your existence. It does a number on your confidence. Number two is the direct, such as that. Just we decline to comment. Obviously, the most appreciated. Number three is the sneaky one, and this is one more so when it comes to requesting such an interview. Because what I will tend to do is, rather than say, "Hey, will you come on the show?" a blanket statement. I give a date. I give a time. No response until after the requested time. "Oh, I just got this now. Sorry, I missed this." That is a more common practice than you would think. And it's, I acknowledge the effort that goes into that. I don't believe in coincidences that this is an email that just got lost over the last couple of days and it was magically found 2 hours after said interview time. But those are the three answers you're going to typically get in this line of work. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My other favorite, though, is off the record, no comment.
Oh, yes. Those are the best.
Nobody
those
gave that to me best. Recently, but that's a good one.
Yeah. Off the record, period. One time in 2025, we're going to do a whole episode covering off the record and not the former Michael Landsberg hosted show, but rather the concept of off the record, because I will go to my grave acknowledging that not two people in this industry have the same definition of it beyond reporters.
I remember telling you recently, like I thought I knew what on background meant, but then some things happened. We were given some statements and they were attributable to someone and I was confused.
Yes. This is the ultimate like nerdy discussion that we are getting into, but I think it's what the people come for. It is the frothiness that brings you back to Pollock and Thurston. So no update, but I mean, Brandon's got his filings right there, constant refresh. If anything breaks over the next hour, we will relay it. But
I should get an email alert if anything happens.
Status quo at the moment.
Yes.
Let's start off with our headliner. And first of all, a round of applause for our graphic designer, Brandon Thurston, a little AI assistance. And what we have is, I think your finest work to date, Brandon. I mean, when I saw this, I had a big smile on my face when you sent this to me and asked, "Is this okay?" And I just,
I had to disclose this is an AI generated image, just this background image, with the other.
That is Mark Shapiro in the flesh.
Yeah, this is as far as I know, this is a real photograph of Mark Shapiro.
Can we deny that this is not the TKO, lunch area that is found in either Las Vegas or Stanford? I mean, this kind of looks like a post-quarterly, the post Christmas party fiesta that is going
on. It could
be
an interpretation thereof.
Well, Mark Shapiro spoke at the UBS Global Conference, and he had a lot to say as he was lining things up for 2025. Do we find it at all as though Mark Shapiro is the go-to person now when it comes to speaking on behalf of TKO in these situations? Like, Ari Emanuel is not really the guy that is out there. Nick Khan has essentially taken a behind-the-scenes role. It is very, very rare that we ever hear from Nick Khan anymore. It does seem Mark Shapiro is that designated executive that is, quite honestly, I think he's very good in these settings.
Yeah, it's not to downplay that Nick Khan isn't the president and isn't the lead executive of WWE, but they are, they are a subsidy of TKO. But I think it is interesting that, the CEO of this company is Ari Emanuel, but this is clearly something that's been delegated to Mark Shapiro, I guess, and maybe Ari Emanuel is more so leading endeavor. But yeah, he's the one who goes out there and talks in public the most, as far as when they're representing this publicly traded company, TKO, whether it's on earnings calls or whether it's in these conference appearances.
So I've isolated a couple of comments from Mark Shapiro, and we have shortened them for brevity's sake. But of course, January 6th, it's WWE moving to Netflix with Raw and a mountain of its international rights. Mark Shapiro is gearing up for January the 6th, but he has his eyes on the long game.
Look, we just had a media day with them that went extremely well. Nick Khan and Triple H, Paul Levesque, were on hand with Bela Bajaria, who, of course, oversees all programming, going through all the creative, talking about a sustained plan over the course of the year. We're excited about that. January 6th itself, Raw, I'll be there at the Intuit Dome in Los Angeles, and we're working on a Drive to Survive right now with them, our own version. So, you know, a lot happening on that front. I'm not worried about January 6th. I tell this to Nick Khan and Paul and Andrew Schleimer, our CFO, all the time. We're going to be big on January 6th. Let's be clear. I'm worried about June. Mm-hmm. I'm worried about July. When we're not the shiny toy, when we're not the newborn, how is Netflix going to treat us? And I'm getting all the right answers and commitments. And so I have no reason to be worried. I like to kind of go about my business as if we're prepared for all events.
I am not worried about January the 6th, the quote from Mark Shapiro and those observing an incoming Republican administration. I think laying things out on the table, and I think that they know that January 6th is going to be a big date, that they have these upcoming NFL Christmas Day shows that are going to be a great push for this launch on Netflix. I think it's going to be a gigantic night for the company. And I would be pretty optimistic that by June, I still think WWE is going to be a pretty, it's going to be a very sizable part of Netflix's live programming strategy, because it's the only weekly programming it's going to have, which is something very outside of the Netflix comfort zone, getting away from one-off events like the NFL or Mike Tyson and Jake Paul.
And he did name John Cena would be there. Has that been confirmed before? I know that's been speculated. At least you would assume that this is a big night. Maybe John Cena will be there. But he did mention not only himself as an attendee, but that John Cena will be on the first Raw on Netflix, as well as CM Punk and Cody. I believe he also mentioned.
Yes, and Travis Scott and performing
Travis Scott
the
music. Yes.
Yes. I can only hope that we get a Mark Shapiro cameo on that Raw. I mean, feeling himself will be quite the draw.
Yes. Yes. But I mean, as we said before, I don't anticipate there's going to be huge problems. Netflix will have another opportunity to live stream something to a very big audience on Christmas for the NFL game. It'll be a much smaller, probably will be, I would think multiple millions will be watching, at least the first episode will be watching it live. Just think about what Raw does on a traditional cable network. It's doing, it just did 1.386 million viewers. So this is going to be global, though. That number that I just said is just the United States. So tack on, you know, people watching in Canada, that's what, hundreds of thousands, right? Extra?
On a good week, 300,000 for Raw.
So no reason to doubt that they'll be watching live. Not to mention, maybe you'll just have, I mean, you are on Netflix, which is in more households probably than USA Network is at this point. So just taking that into consideration too is another reason why you'd expect an elevated audience, not to mention other people around the world who may be watching live. So probably well over 2 million people. And hopefully we'll get some information from that Netflix top 10 chart, if not from Netflix or other sources, Nielsen or other sources after that debut episode.
Yeah. And I would think that the in-house ramp up for WWE is going to really take form this Saturday with Saturday night's main event, and then all focus on that January 6th date for them. Like, they have, you know, a pretty sizable platform on Saturday. They're already embedding little interstitials within the shows promoting January 6th. And I think over these next couple of weeks, that is going to be where all of the promotional muscle is going to go towards. So it's a very, I'm sure, lofty ceiling that they are aiming for on January the 6th.
And you were showing me some information from the Netflix aggregator world about
yes,
the library.
I am not familiar with how accurate this is, but this is a glimmer of hope for those with international viewers in terms of what the what the WWE Network content is going to look like on Netflix.
Yeah, it basically the long and short of it is it looks like almost all of the pay-per-views are coming to Netflix for international, most international subscribers outside the United States. Not right away. It looks like this article is from what's-on-netflix.com, which I had to scroll all the way to the bottom to confirm that they are not affiliated with Netflix. So this is not an official source, but they're saying that almost all of the pay-per-views, except for Money in the Bank and a few others, I think are ruled out here that don't have that is missing, they say right now. Fatal 4-Way, Money in the Bank, and The Big Event from the 1980s. They don't have a date for those yet. But most of the WWE pay-per-views now, what about the WCW pay-per-views, the ECW pay-per-views, the AWA content?
I don't see an image
of Class, the Mid-South. Where's all that stuff?
I don't see any images of Tracy Smothers, New Jack, or Jim Cornette. I don't know. I can
tell. Southpaw Regional Wrestling. What about that?
The big question of Smoky Mountain Wrestling. That to me is the litmus. If Smoky Mountain Wrestling makes its way, Netflix is just opening up the floodgates. They will put anything on here. So, interestingly enough, was today on the WWE Vault channel, Abyss introduced a match from Puerto Rico that I think a lot of people might not be aware of, but if you listen to WrestleNomics, when you had a guest on about 2 years ago,
John Carlin,
John Carlin, yes, name escaped me. They do own all of this, like, Puerto Rican content from it's IWA, correct?
Well, I think they got it from the Clone family, so it's
it's WWC. Yes, yeah. They have all of this stuff. It just wasn't considered like of a certain quality that they were going to put it on the network, but they're just like sitting on this stuff. Like there is untold hours and like hundreds of thousands that they have on standby of this content they have, including Chris Park working in a gym.
Yes. I remember watching like in the early 2000s, I think it was IWA Puerto Rico that was syndicated on Empire Sports Network in my area. But anyway, something we mentioned last week, and I think it was Jake, from the Windy City who mentioned it, it probably would make a lot of sense for them to take that territorial content from people who are kicking and screaming and worrying about where their archival content is going to go. It's probably a good business strategy to just start charging those people $10 a month for that stuff.
Next up was what got a lot of the focus from this. It's more 2-day premium live events for WWE after the expansion of WrestleMania during the pandemic and then SummerSlam moving to 2 nights. Here's Mark Shapiro's thoughts. Could you provide more and thus create more revenue opportunities?
I think there's absolutely an opportunity to advance some of them to 2 days. Paul Levesque just does such a phenomenal job creatively working with Lee Fitting as well. And their teams that draft these scripts where all these superstars want to come back. I mean, WWE is the ultimate. It's the Tiffany product into space. It hovers sports and entertainment. Believe me, you cannot be in it if you're not a superb athlete. These folks take a hit. But it's great because it gives us, a long tail. Whereas UFC, the number of years a certain fighter can compete, of course, is limited. More limited, I should say.
More limited. Yes. These guys, they take a hit. That felt like he's only a few steps away from Ricky the Steamboat Dragon, I think, in his wrestling breakdowns. But, I mean, to no surprise that I think all events on the table, the idea of 2-night Royal Rumbles, we've discussed these in the past. I think all of this stuff is on the table. And it's something that really the UFC has, they have tried on certain circumstances to do like 3 nights in a row in Vegas or a 2-night event, but it is really they have really not seemed to be like that is almost
too much. Tried it. Have they done a two-day event?
They've done as many as 3 where they'd have like 2 televised specials and then the pay-per-view. Sometimes they experimented with Friday, Saturday, Sunday. All in the same location. But it's really not something that you see them, talking about or even looking toward, as opposed to WWE, where I think that they've been able to formulate their pay-per-views where you're selling all of these tickets for, 5 matches spread out over 4 hours. it's not as though like they would necessarily have to exhaust things to just double up on a given weekend. And they're riding a hot hand at the moment that I think at least doing two arena events in a host city will probably be very successful if they were to do that for a Royal Rumble.
Yeah, Royal Rumble makes a lot of sense because you have two battle royals that you're doing, the men's and the women's battle royal. But they're not doing it in Indianapolis. I mean, that event is just over a month, well, about 2 months away. So that's not going to be the first one, but they are doing a 2-day SummerSlam, which he also talked about here. I don't know if you have a clip for that, but he did mention that they got a site fee that was bigger than they were expecting. Not expecting the $7.1 million site fee that they're getting from the New Jersey Sports and Exhibition Authority.
Do you think they divulged that in the moment? They're like, oh, we weren't expecting this much. Why don't we cut this down a little here?
I don't know. I got a quote. It's in the report that I did back in October about what that site fee is. And it blows my mind that they're getting a site fee for SummerSlam that's so much bigger than any WrestleMania number that we know of. And the only numbers for SummerSlam in the past that we know of that are, you know, like something like 3 years ago was, I think, $300,000. I just don't understand, you know, why that's what it is. There's such a big number for SummerSlam and it's bigger than what they're getting in the same year for also a 2-day, WrestleMania in Las Vegas, which they're getting about $5 million for that.
Yeah. And, to catch people up. So SummerSlam, it's Indianapolis this coming summer. And then New Jersey 2025, Minneapolis 2026 for the 2-night SummerSlam.
Right. Yes.
What if you were to look at things like the idea of like a 2-night stadium show for a Royal Rumble? Like, do you feel that like the Royal Rumble is probably your strongest branded event of what's available to expand this? Like, if you were to run Lucas Oil Stadium 2 nights in a row, do you feel like that is just too ambitious of an ask to?
No.
Perform, or are you even looking at this from like a ticket selling perspective? It's all in what these cities are willing to pay for. And if we have like tickets are a bonus, but it's not the be all end all of the success of these events.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure, you know, you're adding volume, so that's going to reduce the ARPU. That's going to reduce the average ticket sale price. But I think there's sufficient demand to do this. There's certainly sufficient content in terms of the amount of content, and there's enough wrestlers and talent to do 10 matches rather than 5 across 2 days. And even I assume it's going to result in more ticket revenue. And even if it didn't, you're adding an extra day of travel time onto all the people who are going to travel into town, and they're going to reserve hotels, and they're going to use restaurants and whatever else. And that's all contributing to the argument to get bigger site fees than you're expecting from local municipalities that are, you know, there was discussion in here too, about, I think it was, 2/3 of their PLEs and UFC pay-per-views are not getting site fees. So look at all that room for growth.
Yeah, let's hear more about our favorite term, site fees.
So we have 24 marquee or premium events a year, 12 UFC, 12 WWE with the PLEs, one per month. And 4 of those are in the Middle East, and 4 just for UFC are in Vegas. That's really our home. Our anchor hub is the T-Mobile Arena there. A third of those 24 events we're getting site fees on, roughly a third. So that leaves another 2/3 to sell. In fact, we've got a MetLife event we've just sold next summer in Jersey, where we're getting a pretty strong site fee that we didn't expect. So all kinds of opportunity to get this high margin revenue. And once you finish those 24, when we actually sell out of those, by the way, and then you're selling title sponsors, in terms of advertising, like we did with Riyadh Season and the Saudis for the Sphere event, then you get to SmackDown, Raw, and our Saturday night fight nights for UFC. And then we can start selling those. Now, those are not going to sell for multi-million the way the premier events do. But whether it's cash or non-cash incentives, those will sell. And it might be a St. Louis here for $1 million. You know, it might be a Des Moines, Iowa here for $500,000. But we will go wherever is best to, again, grow the brand, grow the audience, and cash in on the site fees.
So think of this like a wet towel, and it will be completely wrung dry as they find every way around these events. But, I mean, that is also something that's been spoken about in the past, is the idea of certain televised shows and extending to fight nights to like that is the obvious goal, once they feel they could sell off most of these PLE / pay-per-views between the two companies.
Yeah, and just to explain what I was mentioning, so we did get a quote explaining the SummerSlam site fee, or at least commenting on the SummerSlam site fee from a representative of the New Jersey Sports and Exposition Authority, who said the allocated funds will be used to offset the cost of a negotiated incentive fee that is based in part on the benefits of hosting this two-night event. So I assume they just, you know, they can justify it and to the government entities that grant them the funds to spend and encourage big events like SummerSlam to come to the local area and stimulate the economy.
And the last topic is TKO. They have recently taken on board the thriving bull riding world. And the question next was about boxing and what TKO's interest may be.
Yeah, look, I think boxing could, especially with Fight Pass, right? We own our own direct-to-consumer platform with the UFC, where we put a lot of preliminary bouts from our fight cards. We put karate, jiu-jitsu. We're doing more in wrestling. I mean, Fight Pass is our owned and operated, if you will. And we think we can put some boxing there and really drive subscription growth for Fight Pass. But we're not going to get into boxing by buying anything. Be clear about that. We've got a lot to integrate right now, but we've got a lot to integrate. We've got to keep our eye on the ball. But if something is there, we'll certainly take a look. Boxing is something we would do organically. So nothing to buy, just something we'd start up and likely take a partner, from the Middle East that would serve as an investment partner for us.
Can you think of any partners from the Middle East who might be interested in investing in boxing?
You know what? I think if TKO wants to sit down and talk turkey with any potential investors, I'm certain that they would be able to find one. Ideally, it would be someone with an unlimited public investment fund that has also just purchased Ring Magazine and all of its championship titles that would be looking for such an arrangement. I think that would be the puzzle piece that you would be looking for.
Yes, we are, of course, referring to everyone's favorite combat sports promoter, Turki Alsheikh, who is the chairman of the General Entertainment Authority and or Sports Authority, depending on
ESPN's choice for the most influential person in combat sports, which is not a leap, to say the least, between boxing and MMA, and even with his extension into professional wrestling, obviously, through WWE.
I think the Saudi government, if we're not making it clear. Yeah.
Yes. I think the obvious hesitancy when it comes to boxing is the idea of them going out and buying anything. He mentions the fact of partnering and the fact that they do not want to get into the boxing business. They don't want to have to be privy to having to work with other promoters. Like, they want everything under their control. It is something that Mark Shapiro in conferences like this always talks about, one of their greatest advantages. We're the commissioner. We own all, I think his wording was, we control all the spokes. That is the appeal of the UFC and WWE, is that we are not working with outside entities. We don't have, like, we have control of all areas of business. And I think that
Players Association, no Fighters Association, no Wrestlers Association.
No resistance. Okay. Right. That is what is appealing the most to TKO. Pure sports play, as they like to tout so often. So I don't doubt that boxing would be a natural extension for them, but it would come in where there is limited to no risk getting involved, and taking on a partner that has an enormous budget would be kind of where you would look towards that, and leaning on a platform that they already own that are going to send their audience toward.
And he's fending off speculation about them acquiring something. What are the big boxing organizations that people would even think that they would be acquiring? MVP, which they promoted the Tyson Paul fight, right?
Yeah, that's Jake Paul's organization, Most Valuable Promotions. Whether it's Al Heyman's group, PBC. I mean, these are, like, I don't think they're looking at getting, like, co-promoting with other promoters. I think their ideal would be that Turki Alsheikh gets his stable of fighters, and they are just working directly there, and they are the distributor, and it is the Saudi government that would be operating these fighters that would fight under a UFC Fight Pass banner.
Yeah. On the earnings call, which was what? Which was early November, I think. Mark Shapiro kind of downplayed some comments that he was asked about that were made by Dana White about getting into boxing. And yeah. here he is really giving some expectations about a potential investment in a boxing organization.
Yeah, it was. So Dana White had stated, like, he made it pretty clear, like, it is a question of when, not if, and that I think he even compared himself, like, we will be the HBO in this equation, as opposed to being the fight promoter. And of course, this got all boxing and MMA media focused on this, like, boxing is, how is Dana White going to change boxing? And then we had, Mark Shapiro on the call really downplay that, because I think their concern was, well, this means there's going to be an enormous set of cost attached to this. And I think that is what was downplayed. This was a more kind of middle answer for Mark Shapiro that sounds a bit more optimistic, that if the right opportunity presents itself, something they're aggressively going to go toward. And whether this is a 2025 project or not, we will see. It's sort of Dana White has been talking about boxing for years at this point of, dabbling in it, and it's not real. I just think it's the overall business that UFC has so many advantages not being under the Muhammad Ali Act and other restrictions that, do enable boxers to have a lot more freedom and defense mechanisms when it comes to opposition with promoters, that the UFC does not have to worry about those guardrails.
Yeah. And he's hyping that as content for Fight Pass, right alongside your Pride Fighting Championships. Is Pancrase still on Fight Pass? I think it is.
It may be. In fact, I'm not up on that. But I mean, the UFC, they're launching now their own jiu-jitsu tournaments that they are doing on Fight Pass. I mean, it's a pretty specific audience that you are targeting. It is kind of interesting, like, the relationship or pseudo relationship that exists between TKO and Power Slap. That might, like, if you watch a UFC broadcast, you would just be of the impression that this is a sub-brand of the UFC. It gets ad inventory, it gets reads by the hosts, they are promoting upcoming events, and yet this is a separate entity of Dana White and the Fertitta brothers, and it is not something that I think they want to, they feel it would be a clean story.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you can understand the business that you're investing in. I think that was an issue with Endeavor, is that there are all these interesting assets perhaps in Endeavor, some of which have now been taken out of Endeavor and are going to go into TKO, but that they're, how do you evaluate this business? Like, what is it's there aren't really key performance indicators. There's an attendance or TV ratings or media deals that are really explicitly a part of this that move the levers of the business in a big way.
All right. Well, summarizing all of this was a late contender for quote of the year.
The marketplace is frothy.
And that is how we will remember this particular UBS conference from Mark Shapiro. Moving on to our next topic. Let's dive into it. Okay. So earlier this week, Fightful Select posted a story regarding outstanding issues involving Ryan Nemeth with AEW, and Fightful was able to obtain a complaint that was sent to multiple executives back in September with a timeline of events that Nemeth had highlighted regarding abuse, harassment, and threats he faced while working there. So it is a bit of a distorted picture that we have. This is obviously coming very much from, like, the Nemeth point of view of what he underwent. And this kind of all goes back to when CM Punk had come back onto television in June 2023, and he did that first promo back and took his swipe at the Young Bucks. And later that evening, Ryan Nemeth tweeting that the softest man alive, not stating CM Punk by name, but I mean, hard to not put two and two together of what the audience was to take from that tweet. And then Nemeth, who had done an interview months later, explained that was an in-character tweet. That was in character.
Yes. That's the Hulk Hogan defense, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
When there's repercussions, it was in character. I don't really listen. I think there's a lot of sympathy toward Ryan Nemeth, but I mean, the idea that you would not know that you were stoking the flames with a tweet like that. I mean, you could not have been too stunned at there being fallout from that. And that's not to excuse what was going to unravel in the months to come, but that is kind of the basis of this. And I think it is just, it's worth noting, like, what this started as and what it grew into, and just what a disastrous situation all of this was. And this is just another aspect to.
So his contract has expired with AEW, correct?
Yes, it expired back in March.
Right. So I guess what he's raising here, this is a document that he says, well, this is a document that Fightful reports was given to AEW HR and other executives. And he's raising that he feels like he was retaliated against or held down and not booked for TV because of CM Punk's unhappiness with him. And I guess, you know, some contentious interactions he had with Punk. A few things that I think are interesting to raise. He says he recorded some conversations at a TV taping in North Carolina that he was asked to leave once he showed up at. And I did check immediately after reading that yes, North Carolina is a single party consent state where you can record conversations with only your own consent if you are a participant in that conversation. No laws apparently were broken there. But
the second biggest recording since Wrestling with Shadows.
Yes. There's a lot of talk about Omega Parrick, who is the former AEW chief legal officer. And there is a mention in Fightful's report that at a certain point in this story, she abruptly left the company. We still don't have a really clear answer about why, what led to her leaving the company. But that's part of it. And I guess, you know, would you say that, you know, was he not booked for TV strictly because of retaliation and protecting and appeasing CM Punk? I mean, AEW does have over 100 wrestlers. Many of them are very talented. I wouldn't necessarily put Ryan Nemeth at the top of that list. Sorry, but I could see why, you know, on one hand he would be upset, but on the other hand, it might not be. He was not exactly in for a push, I think.
Yeah. In this, this timeline, he outlines that AEW failed to respond to any of the incidents and was encouraged to cut a promo to antagonize CM Punk
That always makes things better.
Yeah, that would that seemed to be, you know, let's thaw the
ice. I have the perfect solution to this. Go out there and cut a promo ribbing on the square at this guy. That's a great answer. I know. I just thought it sort of speaks to, regardless of who's in the right and wrong here. I think it just speaks to the dysfunction that tends to occur in AEW.
Now, this was largely understood, assumed based on the nature of CM Punk being fired as he was in September. But like this complaint, this outline, like, specifically states him as an executive / producer / manager role that he is holding within AEW, making it very clear that this was not just another independent contractor. Yeah. And it really does change the dynamic of all of this when this is not just another member of the locker room. This is a superior as well that is doing all of this. And I think also gives a lot of context to that press conference, the one after All Out 2022, of "I work with children." I mean, he is in an executive position as he is speaking of this, but this was never disclosed or out in the open of just how we knew Punk had influence, but was there a title attached to it? This certainly suggests there was.
I mean, we assume that there are a number of wrestlers, presumably the more high profile wrestlers, who are in dual status as independent contractors, as talent, but also have at least some informal, if not formal, role as employees, whether that's, I don't know how they categorize it, as advisors or something like that. Jericho has said that he has employee status as well as independent contractor status. Clearly the EVPs do. And maybe there are others, you know. I wouldn't be surprised if a number of wrestlers who are higher profile wrestlers have renewed their deals and have employee status as part of that, perhaps.
So going through this timeline, we go back to CM Punk appearing, his only Dynamite appearance during his return period in 2023. There's a Dynamite in Chicago, which is the Wednesday before Forbidden Door in Toronto, just if everyone's keeping this straight. And this is where Nemeth alleges he was threatened by Punk in the locker room, and then Nemeth stating that he was not booked for 2 months after that incident. And we fast forward to July, and he reaches out to Megaparek and believing he has been silently fired and that his deal would just be left to expire, and Parek assuring him that him speaking up was not going to cost him his job as he is waiting. Then on August the 12th, there is a collision in Greensboro that he has contacted to be at. And once he gets there, he is seen by Punk and shortly after is told he is no longer needed for this show. And this is where Nemeth states he has audio from this particular day of August 12th, 2023, which is just 2 weeks before All In at Wembley and the subsequent fallout between CM Punk and the Jack Perry incident. Megaparek leaves her position. Now he is dealing with Chris Peck and Margaret Stalvey and spoke with counsel after the Punk and Perry incident. And November 18th is the last time Nemeth would work for AEW with his contract expiring in March. And the timeline, it goes on to explain how Chris Peck had communicated an interest in a settlement that would equal approximately 3 years of his salary, dependent on signing an NDA on the matter. Nemeth's document says he was appreciative of the offer and wanted to discuss it, but his legal counsel, but the offer was then no longer an option. And Nemeth's document also claims that Peck told him, quote, that he'd be placed in an antagonistic position to Mega if things ever escalated to arbitration, which is never something that I think a company wants to be accused of, that your lone form of any kind of conflict resolution would be met with an antagonistic position with an executive. Does not paint a great picture. I have no doubt that AEW is not going to address this in any way, and therefore you're going to get this side of things out there. But I think it is very fair to say that whatever you think of, like, what in the grand scheme of things was a fairly harmless tweet, maybe not harmless given the individual that was involved here, that it was the target. But I mean, what this grew into, it's just so indicative of just this powder keg that was growing and growing. And this was just more wood on the fire that made this into such an untenable position that as we speak about, it still comes up. And this company is still, I think, dealing with this as this albatross on it, even with CM Punk no longer involved in the company.
What do you think makes it, you know, why is, you got the same person, CM Punk, who's in a different company now. Why was he so surrounded by problems, apparently, that this document that Fightful reported on shows at least one case of that? We know he was in a physical fight with the Bucks and Omega in September 2022. And yet, you know, he's been with WWE now for over a year. And yeah, he's doing promos with Seth Rollins that are cutting close to the bone. But we've heard nothing about fights, or maybe he just had more power in AEW and he was exploiting that, I guess, is what you would argue.
You obviously do. And I think that there is, like, from the very get-go, I have always argued, I don't think there is one specific person that is at fault here. I think fault can be assigned in many different directions. A lot of it has to fall on CM Punk for just the preponderance of issues, but he was also given, I think, a ton of leeway. The fact that he was brought back, like, this was someone who his value trumped his actions. And for many people,
I think part of it is just a lot of talent, especially higher profile talent, are given a lot of leeway. And I think there is a leadership issue when it comes to managing talent that contributes in a large way to issues like this in AEW.
If you read this, and I do encourage people to read this full report from Sean Ross Sapp at Fightful Select, you read this. This is not Ryan Nemeth outlining all of his anger or frustration towards CM Punk. This is Ryan Nemeth assigning this as an issue with executives. And when you're talking about, like, a preponderance of people, like,
it's
a culture.
Leadership and communication.
It's a culture that this is, whether fair or unfair, and I'm sure there are those in AEW that will disagree with this assessment, this is the image being projected to the public and painting it as dysfunctional leadership. And you can look back, and I can understand a lot of reasons about Tony Khan believing that we are still in a startup position and we have not secured our big television deal to let go of CM Punk is costing our business value, and I'm going to do my best. I'm not going to pick the one side over the other. I want the Elite under this umbrella, and I want CM Punk under this umbrella. And I can appreciate that sentiment, but the results are what the results were, and this turned out to be an utter disaster. And whether this could have been handled in such a way that these sides could have gone to neutral corners and we could have found a working environment, that is not what occurred here. And it's unfortunate that there is just this plethora of instances that look as though things were just not handled in a coherent fashion and people's careers were affected by this. Like, I think it's very fair to say, like, this ended Ryan Nemeth's career in AEW. And he believes he was a scapegoat for them having to let CM Punk go. That, again, is his perspective.
I think there's a common theme here, right, in this story, in Punk's story, even about how he had to pay for his own medical treatment after he tore his triceps in 2022. The issues with Ricky Starks, issues I think we're talking about today with Phoenix, in that it just sounds like there isn't great communication, which maybe there's just not a clear message about how to handle certain things from Tony.
And there's also less of a reluctance, I think, for talent to speak openly about these situations in public. Like, I'm not saying, like, this is not to just gloss over that, you know, WWE has many, many problems that we have outlined significantly this year. But the idea of a talent going out and just running down WWE's medical practices and such, like, there is frustration, and we have seen that in the past from performers, but that not so much under this current regime, at least not until you're out of the company. And even then, it's very rare that you see and whether that is just a concern about future employment or not wanting to put yourself in that negative light, all of this compounds itself. And I don't know what the easy answer is. Like, if you are AEW, do you attack this head on and get your side out there and explain? That's obviously not in their playbook, that they would much rather just, they are hands off. Like, this is a company, like, when they send their talent out and they do interviews and such, they do not want negative headlines. Like, that is what they want to avoid. When they do PR, they want to be away from these stories as much as possible. And it's a hands-off policy when it comes to addressing anything medical related and anything CM Punk related. Like, we know what the extent of it is going to be, unless there is an opportunity for something on television that will be of value to them, such as security footage.
Yes. I mean, even when Britt Baker was suspended a few months ago, Tony was asked about it in an interview and would not even speak to whether that had happened, whether there was a suspension. Almost made it sound like there wasn't a suspension, almost like he was denying it.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Since this does segue into the Phoenix story, again, this is a story where, I mean, it really does come down to, like, Phoenix's public comments over the weekend. First of all, we had Penta removed from the roster, so it would appear he is free and clear to go where he chooses now. Phoenix, though, still has significant time left on his deal, believed to be well into 2025, and he responded to a question on X over the weekend stating, "I will have my chance to speak the truth. No one stays in a place where they received inhumane treatment," and then adding, "I needed a doctor and you ignored me for months." And he has not been used since July. He is scheduled to do a meet and greet for House of Glory on December the 20th, which is also the same night as Final Battle. So I don't know. He will actually be doing a show in New York, a non-wrestling appearance, not too far away from where the Hammerstein show is going on that first night.
Yeah, I see multiple outlets are reporting that he has since deleted these tweets.
What do you think from the Ray Phoenix side of things? I can certainly understand you are frustrated and you feel this is your outlet. I think it gains a lot of sympathy from a fan base that wants to see this performer in the ring. I also think this is something that not only do I think that it's sometimes not just the most tactful move to make, it's how does this look in terms of my image for where I want to be going? If I want to be going to a WWE, is this, do I want to be carrying out my business publicly like this? Whether you agree with him or don't agree with him, that's an aspect to all of this. But there's also the knowledge that like AEW is not going to fire back at you. AEW is not going to come back and give its explanation of things, even if there is a valid one about how it goes about its medical procedures and what their side of it is. You're just kind of left with the side of things. I mean, he remains under contract, and I don't think that aspect is going to change. If this is a strategy to get out of your contract, I don't think it's going to be an effective strategy.
No, I mean, this is not how I would advise wrestlers to handle their grievances with their employer.
All right, we move on to Conor McGregor. This past weekend, UFC 310 went down. I know Brandon was tuning into the press conference. Going to find out what would Dana White's response be as the biggest star in the history of the entire industry was recently found civilly liable after being accused of sexual assault by Nikita Hand. And it was Kevin Ioli who asked Dana White for his comment around 2 weeks after the decision was rendered in Ireland.
We haven't had a chance to talk to you since the thing about Conor McGregor came down. Any reaction that you have since the conviction in the civil court and the penalties he faced?
What do you mean? What's my reaction?
Do you have any comment about what his...
If I had a comment, I would have put it out already.
What about his status with the UFC?
He hasn't been fighting here in I don't know how long.
But there's been, you know, you've announced him at 303. There's been talk he's going to fight.
Right.
I mean, does that impact him in any way? Or?
Well, if he does fight, it'll be sometime next year.
So much to take from that. What do you mean? What's my comment? I don't know. Literally, your biggest star. This guy hasn't fought here in years. What's his name? Connor something? It's just amazing to me is that.
But different than that is he's still going to fight for them.
He's going to fight for them, and they're going to be unapologetic about that fact. I just find it so fascinating that this is all under the same company. And I make the comparison of this to a Brock Lesnar that, I mean, we're coming up on a year and Brock, they have been completely hands off with Brock, who is not accused of anything near what Conor McGregor was. And, you know, they obviously like these are ultimately TKO decisions about who they are going to utilize. And they do not feel that Brock Lesnar is an asset to them in this current climate. And with Conor McGregor in a contract year, no less, for UFC, I don't think they're going to have any hesitation on promoting a fight with Conor McGregor. And the other part of it is that I can't even say that Dana White is wrong in terms of his assessment of what the public's reception will be to Conor McGregor fighting again. I don't think his pay-per-view is going to be impacted by this decision. And I think that in several months' time, I think a lot of the fan base, the second the Conor McGregor fight is announced, it will be everyone will be on to the fight hype, the promotional events going into it, and celebrating a Conor McGregor return. There'll be a vocal minority that will be uneasy about it, but I don't think they'll skip a beat by promoting a Conor McGregor fight. And I don't know if that would be the case too in WWE. My thought would be there'd be backlash to Brock showing up on an event. And in time, it would just be business as usual.
There would be more by proportion in WWE, but I think they could get away with it. The only question, it would be the calculus I have to think would be the same in either case, WWE or UFC, is there going to be any sponsor pushback?
That's the only pressure point that would detect. And I think it is also interesting. I was going to pull this up today. It's also when you look at like the type of sponsorships that UFC is acquiring. They have just replaced Manscaped. Are you familiar with this?
I'm familiar with Manscaped.
Well,
not sponsoring this podcast.
Yes. I'm going to pull this up here because I want to get the right name. Anyway, their new sponsor is the Anti-Woke Razor Company. And the name escapes me, but
Jeremy's like, this Patriot is, Shave.
Yes.
Woke free.
Yes.
Jeremy's Razors is woke free. But there's also Patriot Shave, which is for Americans who love America. It's an alternative to woke corporations. There's multiple. There's many people competing for your anti-woke razor.
Yeah, it's a huge conflict that a lot of Americans have in the morning is where, you know, if you're combating sleep or a lack thereof, and you've got to deal with a woke razor. I mean, that's too much on the American consumer. So I am glad that this portion of the market is being addressed. But my larger point is that, you know, there's a lot of these companies and sponsors that are very much in alignment with what the UFC brand is. And it's very much it is clearly a audience that is embracing this type of ideology. And there is no way a Jeremy's Razor is going to take any issue with these decisions on which fighters are being booked. That we saw a difference from when it came to Slim Jim back in January in light of the Vince McMahon allegations.
And in Vince's case, I mean, that is a civil lawsuit that there has been no decision in yet.
No, he has not been found guilty of anything. He has not had his day in court. It is just a lawsuit, and that was enough to remove him. It's all down to the pressure they receive for these decisions. It's not weighing this allegation versus that allegation. It's only the response to the given allegations that are going to...
In McGregor's case, he has a jury has decided against him and has basically decided it's more than likely that he did what, at least some of what he's accused of, which is sexual assault.
Yes. So that is, I just find it, it is interesting. And it's not like Dana White received any criticism for this. It was like, this was his response. It's very different. The audiences in wrestling and the audiences in MMA,
because the MMA fans online say this is not the time or place to ask such questions.
Yeah, I mean, I did not see too many accusations of Kevin Ioli ruining the mood in the press conference, ruining the vibe, the upbeat vibe that a press conference room should have at 1 a.m. Eastern time. But there you have it. That was the latest on the Conor McGregor front. He's actually contemplating moving to the U.S., leaving Ireland altogether.
Well, there's when there's great brands like Jeremy's Razors, I can see why you'd want to move.
Yeah, once the Wax Museum in Ireland is removing your statue, it's probably time to put the for sale sign up and take off. So yes, the Wax Museum has taken a greater stance against Conor McGregor than his fight promoter. All right, before we end things off, let's talk about AEW All in Texas, because this past Monday they staged a on sale event outside of Globe Life Field hosted by Tony Schiavone and Conrad Thompson. And this led to the announcement that StarCast will return in conjunction with All in Texas. And with tickets going on sale, they have announced that, well, Tony Khan stated that as of this past weekend, they had already sold over $1 million worth of tickets during the pre-sale, which tells you some of these VIP packages were very highly priced. We do not have a figure yet for the tickets distributed yet. I'm sure our man at WrestleTix is furiously crunching numbers, as I know Brandon has as well. But this is a huge event for AEW. I think this is going to have a ton of spotlight on AEW, and fairly or not, this is going to be an event that I think many are going to assess the relative strength of the company to draw a stadium-sized show in the U.S., which is
especially
their first state.
They just moved their Australia show, which is going to be in a stadium, not going to be in an arena.
Right.
$1.25 million is what Tony Khan said. That was before general on sale. That's just in pre-sale, right?
Which is an extraordinary advance. Like, outside of WWE, I mean, to do $1 million is like, it's AEW and no one else, unless you take into account inflation. But that's an extraordinary number just for the presale.
So if we think about what the average ticket price for this upcoming All In might be, I would look back for some point of reference. Regardless of there may be anecdotes about how highly priced these tickets are, but let's just think about what we know is, which is what's been claimed, which is that the $10 million gate for All In 2023 was sold to, according to AEW, 81 or 80, this number on the screen here. So you divide that, you get an average ticket price, average ticket sold price in 2023 for All In at Wembley Stadium of $123. And if you take $1.25 million divided by $123, you get about 10,160, you get 10,162 ticket sales. Now that's if that ticket price is right. And I think it's being generous to take a ticket price from 2 years ago that's at the end of its process, versus early in this process where you've probably got the most avid fans who are the most willing to pay higher ticket prices who have bought early versus the people later on who will buy the cheaper tickets, I think. So I guess I would say maybe it's in that ballpark of 10,000. I have been looking at the map. I've got some more work to do and looking at the resale maps to get a better idea of exactly what's been, put on sale and what has not been put on sale, because not everything, as people know who look at the Ticketmaster maps as well as WrestleTix analysis of those maps, there's a lot of tickets that they're considering putting on sale, but they're just holding back so you can't see them, at the moment, so that it's not easy for people, including WrestleTix, to determine what is a fair estimate of tickets distributed.
Is there a friction going on between the
there's an arms race actually going on right now. Yes,
with the ticket counters out there as well. I'm sure there's a whole division.
There may be a coding arms race happening in the WrestleNomics.
These are the more intriguing wars I want to hear about. Okay, I'm not interested in television numbers. I'm not interested in any of this tribalism stuff. I just want to hear about the coding and ticketing arms race that you speak of. But this event went down on Monday morning, and they had several of their talents come out, and this included Bryan Danielson, Sting, Darby Allin was in attendance. Tony Khan was there. They did a fair amount of media, but the big news, Big Boom AJ will be out of his walking boot in 2 weeks' time, and he's ready for those Hammerstein ballroom shows in New York. So this guy has been this interesting addition, along with Big Justice, to the AEW roster, it appears. And someone that they clearly, I mean, it was a great success at Full Gear, and it looks as though he is in the mix.
He is. Yeah. He's going to have more matches, I guess. He was definitely leading to having more matches than AEW. You know, while there are celebrities in boxing, why not more celebrities in wrestling? And isn't that what everyone wanted from their alternative to WWE in 2019? Is people from TikTok, not from linear TV.
Final notes before we get out of here. Let's go over a couple of television numbers. So Collision returned to its regular Saturday night time slot for the first time since November 16th. They were off due to Full Gear. Then they got moved out of their time slot the same day as the Survivor Series, and then making their return on Saturday night. And the results saw Collision draw 278,000 viewers and a 0.07 in the demo. So a lot of focus was just the comparison to the week prior. But I kind of throw out that Saturday where it aired from 4 till 6 against the Survivor Series pre-show, outside of its time slot.
The show was up 133%, all right?
Amazing. The turnaround is done. I mean, I think the fairer comparison would be to November 16th when it last aired in the exact same time slot. Now, it is worth noting this did air against WWE Deadline. Don't call it NXT. Yes. So that probably as much of a hindrance as anything to Collision on top of the regular college football competition, which is immense on Saturday nights. So not a great number for Collision, can we assume to say?
I think Programming Insider put out data today, so we can see where it ranks, but I haven't looked at it. But yeah, it's Collision being under 0.10. Is this better or worse than replacement programming, like a rerun movie or something like that? It might be getting close.
And then we just got the Raw number that came in from Monday. 1,386,000 viewers and a 0.43 in the demo, which was down 19% in viewers and down 21% in the demo. And if there is going to be the promotional wizardry of the week award, it goes to ESPN PR, who were quick to put out that the Cincinnati Bengals Dallas Cowboys game, it did almost 19 million viewers across ABC, ESPN, and ESPN2. So how do you take this number and make it sound the most impressive? It was the most watched Monday Night Football Week 14 game in the ESPN era, which is accounting since 2001, which is...
This says 2006 to present.
Oh, sorry, 2006 to present. Okay, so since 2006, the most watched Week 14 game on a Monday night. Sounds a lot better than saying the sixth highest Monday night game of the season. So bravo to ESPN PR, because that is how you promote your audience, which, again, this is an incredible audience. But, I mean, it's it was just an average number for Monday Night Football overall this season. Like, it's
and that's
right
not even
in
taking into account that this was probably cannibalized by the Simpsons broadcast that was happening on ESPN Plus as well as Disney Plus.
Yeah,
probably, probably really capturing that P217 demographic.
Yeah, I did not see any of this Simpsons cast. I'm assuming you missed it as well.
Yes, I did not see it.
Oh, that's unfortunate. But there you have it with Raw, which was pretty consistent from hour one to hour
yes.
two. But Not a whole lot to talk about with the Raw number. And that is it. Everyone is caught up to date. Any outstanding issues, topics, questions, or inquiries, Brandon?
Along the lines of AEW ticketing business, we did get a number for the Toledo Collision. So we very rarely get Polestar numbers for AEW anymore since about June. But we do know that they drew a $67,000 gate for the Toledo Collision in October, which is exceptionally low. That was based on under 2,000 ticket sales. So just to give you some idea of what probably a lower end event would do, but nonetheless, under $100,000, I thought was astonishing when I saw that number.
Yes. Also, we got the update. 1,200 tickets sold for Winnipeg Pro Wrestling.
Yes, we are getting our Winnipeg Pro Wrestling updates, which we appreciate.
All right. Which was a very impressive number for a Winnipeg independent, which Jack Wanon was on the scene for and wrote a story about.
Oh, he was at that event.
Oh, he was at that show. Yes. Yes.
Okay.
So there you go. You are now all caught up to date. Next Wednesday will be our last show of the year. We will be taking Christmas Day off. We apologize, as will New Year's Day. Might be doing a show sometime that first week of January, if we can slot it in sometime before the Netflix launch. But
yes,
that is all. Next week, maybe a whole roundup of what happened in 2000.
Next week, we're here.
And 24.
2 weeks after that.
Yes. Correct. Yes. So we are back next Wednesday, 1 p.m. Eastern time. And of course, you can follow myself over at postwrestling.com. I'm back tonight with Wei Ting chatting Dynamite. Winter is coming in Kansas City, Missouri. Meanwhile, Brandon is back on Sunday with WrestleNomics Radio. You can subscribe at patreon.com/WrestleNomics and get those questions in to Brandon. Pick his brain. Any and all subjects, whether they be very technical questions from people that may or may not hold executive titles in pro wrestling companies, such as we got this past Sunday.
There's medical device. And this is free for everybody. You can watch it right now. There's medical device math that you can watch. Very exciting stuff. And just like this program, there will not be on the last 2 weeks. Well, the week of Christmas and the week of New Year's, there will not be WrestleNomics Radio either.
We didn't want to go head to head with Christmas. We just thought it would. We're not as ambitious as Dynamite will be running a show that night. So
yes,
everyone can focus on Dynamite on 34th Street on Christmas Day. But that's it for us. Thanks to everyone for tuning in, and we're back next Wednesday.
Professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, so focus is important. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, focus and quickly get through work with relevant real-time suggestions. And it works across 500,000 apps and websites, so you can sound more confident and persuasive wherever you write. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets. guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.